Welcome into the Ether, a podcast focusing on all things Ethereum, the leading blockchain for decentralized applications. I'm Eric Connor, your host and founder of ETHub, a decentralized information hub for Ethereum. Into the Ether features deep dives on topics with prominent guests in the community, as well as ETHub weekly recaps featuring Anthony Cesano. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the ETHub weekly recap. On these episodes, we discuss the latest news from the Ethereum ecosystem and crypto space as a whole. This week, we are discussing the news from May 20th to May 26th. Hey, Anthony, you want to walk us through the news?
Hey, Eric. Sure. So first, just an update on the ETHub side. We have a merch store going live soon. So we've been working on this for a few weeks now. We had a few designs created. We're going to do some t-shirts, probably some hoodies and some stickers. So do keep an eye out for that. We'll announce it via the usual channels once it's live. And we hope that you like what we've put together. There's a couple of meme ones in there and just some ones with the ETHub logo on it as well. So hopefully you guys see some value in it. And you know, if you buy some, it goes towards supporting ETHub's further development, basically. We'd probably just put the money into like the donation pool or whatever and use that to grow ETHub. Hope you like it. Onto the news now. So we were talking about this just last week about Facebook's stablecoin, and this week we got even more news about it. So they're going to be calling it Globalcoin, which is such a weird name. It's so ominous. It's like Globalcoin. It reminds me of eCoin from Mr. Robot, for anyone who's seen that show. It sounds so Facebook. Like, everyone says that Mark Zuckerberg reminds them of like a robot, and like Facebook wants to take over the world and suck all the data out of the world just because of, you know, how the platform works. And now they've come out with the name Globalcoin. It's like, what? Anyway, so they're planning to launch this in Q1 2020 to dozens of countries, apparently. There's not really more details than that at the moment. They're looking to release more details, you know, over the coming months about it. But this kind of blew up on Twitter as well. Everyone was just like, this is just weird. Like, what can we expect from this coin? Is it actually going to be a cryptocurrency? I mean, we've spoken about this in the past. It's not going to be like a true cryptocurrency or anything like that. It's probably going to be some kind of private solution that they just use crypto blockchain as a marketing term or some way to, you know, get those initial users or get people interested in the platform. And it's working, right? There's already a ton of free advertising happening for Facebook's like Globalcoin from everyone. I mean, we're talking about it right now on the podcast. So everyone's kind of, I think, very intrigued by this and wanting to know more and wanting to see how these private companies, not just Facebook, but other private companies, go forward about issuing their own kind of currency, which is, you know, weird to think about because traditionally private companies haven't issued their actual own kind of currency. It's been like, I don't know, video game companies have in-game currencies and things like that, but they're kind of localized. You know, you have reward points and other kind of proxy currencies that apps use, but they're definitely localized and they're not cryptos that trade freely on open markets for kind of fiat money and things like that. They're more, hey, buy these tokens off us, and you know, you can't sell these tokens, you can't trade them with anyone else. You basically just buy them from us, and they're workable. They work on our platform only. Whereas, you know, we could imagine Facebook's coin being a crypto that can be used anywhere. So it could just be a stable coin like GUSD or USDC or even DAI. But I mean, I wouldn't compare it to DAI, considering I don't think that Facebook's going to decentralize anything about this. So yeah, curious to see what happens with this going forward.
Yeah, definitely. It's just like you said, like, it's so ridiculous that they would call it Globalcoin, right? I mean, it sounds like, I don't know, I'm sure everyone's seen the movie Dodgeball, but I just thought of Global Gym whenever I see this now. Like, the name, I feel like that can't be the real name, right? I know all the news said it was, but I feel like it'll launch and maybe that's just like the working name. If it is the real name, I mean, they need to fire whoever was on the marketing team with it because it's just ridiculous. But I mean, yeah, I mean, we've talked about this in the past a few times. I can't get too excited about this. It seems, or my hunch would be, that it's just going to be a payment coin used inside of their apps and like their any Facebook games or their video platform and obviously the social media side. But then it kind of comes down to like, why do you even need to build a crypto, right? I'm assuming it's going to be kind of like the Binance chain, where there's like five validators and they're all owned by Facebook themselves. So you have this illusion of decentralization. You get to say that you have a crypto, but at the end of the day, you're just controlling the network and there's no like trustlessness or anything about it there. maybe it's a good way. I mean, obviously there's benefits to doing that, like quicker settlement and stuff like that, and not having to open up a ton of different banking licenses across the world. So maybe they see a benefit there, but it seems to be, to me so far, it seems to just be kind of a selfish play by Facebook to, you know, I mean, obviously it's cool, I guess they're exploring the space, and obviously if they see benefits in the technology itself, that's bullish still, but I don't think they're setting out to kind of revolutionize or help push along the kind of the core crypto space that is out there.
Yeah, definitely not. It feels like, I mean, these tech companies, they all kind of do similar things, right? Where they look at new tech and they say, hey, we need to be in this, right? We've seen a lot of private blockchains stood up over the last few years. You know, private blockchains kind of defeat the purpose of, I guess, a blockchain, but there is a vision that these private blockchains will connect into the public Ethereum chain. So there's that, of course. But yeah, in general, I think tech companies are just looking to get ahead of the next big thing, the next innovative thing, kind of disrupt themselves. Because, you know, we've seen time and time again about these big companies be disrupted by technology. And they, like, I mean, I've spoken about this before. Facebook didn't see Snapchat coming, tried to buy Snapchat, couldn't do it. So they had to make their own. And they were lucky because they have such a large user base. They were able to kind of kill Snapchat's first mover advantage, which I think only someone like Facebook could do that, considering the fact that they have such a large user base. But yeah, so we'll see what happens with Globalcoin over the next few months. So second bit of news I wanted to talk about was that FINRA, one of the regulators in America, approved the Grayscale Ethereum Trust for trading. And this is really cool. This basically, as I understand, it gives you know, normal retail investors kind of exposure to Ethereum without actually having to hold Ether. I'm not an expert on how this works. I think I'll defer to you for this one, Eric.
Yeah, so how this essentially works, at least how I understand it, is Grayscale kind of holds the crypto in a trust or under management. I mean, it's called, they're technically called Grayscale Investments, but it's called the G. So they've had Bitcoin for a while. It's called the Grayscale Bitcoin Trust. They hold assets under management, and then they kind of sell those shares to their assets under management to people. What's cool about it is you can buy it in your 401k. Like, people can buy it out of their traditional investment accounts, like say E-Trade or Fidelity or whatever it might be, and your IRA, stuff like that. They've actually had the Ethereum option for a little while, but it was only to accredited investors who, I think you had to buy $25,000 worth or more. This is opening it up to everybody, like the Bitcoin one. And you can essentially just buy it over the counter, which your brokerage would do for you. It's a pretty big deal to me, right? Like, I think they said right now they have 12.5 million Ether under management. So that means, you know, they've bought this and now they're kind of reselling shares to people, and they manage it. I think they charge like a 2% fee a year for this. But, you know, now people see the option to buy Ethereum out of their traditional brokerage accounts. I think this is definitely going to be, everyone talks about institutional money, which is obviously huge, and I do think it's coming. But I think one thing people are sleeping on a lot is just access to crypto from traditional brokerage accounts. I know a lot of people wouldn't trust. I mean, obviously, to us, Coinbase is amazingly reputable, and we feel comfortable buying crypto on there. But to a lot of people who just kind of use their traditional brokerage route, they wouldn't want to trust it or move their money over there, right? So this is kind of, you're not fully buying ownership in Ether like you would on, say, Coinbase, but you're at least getting exposure to price movements. And I think that's a very good thing. And I think this is kind of the breaking the ice of starting to see crypto investment options on the brokerage and 401k side.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned the kind of institutional investor side and how they don't trust or, you know, might not see Coinbase or other exchanges as trustworthy as compared to their kind of traditional places where they buy, you know, different assets. I think we're going to be seeing this happen over the next few months with the launch of Fidelity, ErisX, Bakkt, all these kind of institutional grade platforms to allow all these different types of people to get access to crypto. So, you know, the institutional money is coming, has become like kind of a meme, I guess, in the community, but it definitely is coming, right? There's no doubt about it. I think crypto, I mean, we both think crypto is the most bullish asset class in history. I mean, it sounds quite, you know, hopium, I guess, induced comment to make, But I do believe that it definitely is one of, if not the most bullish asset class, just simply, I mean, for a number of reasons, right? We don't have to go through the reasons now, but, and I think giving institutional investors access to this, and once they kind of realize, you know, the eye-watering gains is one thing, but kind of the power that these kind of assets give you, you know, whether it's a staking power, or whether you buy Bitcoin as kind of like a store of value or digital gold or whatever, like a lot of this is narrative driven, but I think people kind of get the point there. We'll definitely see this reflected in the price, if not already, because we've been quite bullish for the last few months. And this is because we've seen a few of these products go online. You know, people buying in anticipation of course, the Bitcoin halvening, Ethereum 2.0's development's moving along quite steadily as well. So all these kind of things is going to materialize, I think, soon enough. And we're going to be seeing these reflected in the markets for sure.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, we had a huge wave of retail investors, you know, a year and a half ago or whatever. But I don't think we've had the real wave of retail investors, because I personally know a lot of people that are interested in investing in crypto, but they would never do it if it wasn't available through their brokerage account. So, you know, there's a lot of just money on the sidelines still that's interested in crypto. And, you know, E-Trade had announced the other day they're going to offer Bitcoin and Ether trading. And I feel like people kind of glossed over that, to me, giant news. I think there's a lot of money on the sidelines that would like to get in, but they just want to trust their traditional investment avenues. And, you know, this Grayscale Ethereum Trust is definitely an avenue there, but I think we're going to even see just pure crypto trading on these brokerage firms soon. And that's going to really open the door to some new retail investors.
Yeah, it's funny. It actually like seemed insane to me for a little while when I kind of thought to myself, if these people are going to end up buying crypto anyway, why not just jump through those extra couple of hoops to buy it on Coinbase and things like that? And, you know, there's obviously a number of reasons for this, but I don't know. I still think it's quite insane that if this person's brokerage account gets access to this crypto when, you know, Bitcoin's 20K again and ETH is 1K, and they finally buy it because of that, they've missed all the gains that they could have had by buying right now. So I don't know, it seems insane to me, but then when you look into it more, it kind of makes sense, depending on the person's position and where the money is. Like some of the money is locked up in different other investments. Like I know in America, there's the 401k, which is like the retirement account, which is kind of, it's easier to invest that, or for that to be invested through traditional institutional products rather than obviously cashing it out or trying to use it to buy crypto on Coinbase or something like that. So I understand from that perspective, but if there's people literally waiting on the sidelines right now for their brokerage account to have access to crypto and they have fiat on hand, why not just use Coinbase? Like, I mean, Coinbase has custody now, right? There's obviously limits to that and things like that, but Coinbase accounts, as far as I know, are also insured up to $250,000 as well. So, you know, if you were hacked or something like that, I think a security thing is definitely huge. Like the custody of these assets is definitely huge in this space. There's a lot of people who obviously don't want to custody their own assets, especially, I guess, people that aren't as clued into the technology as well. Even people that are, right? Even people that are to be considered like young people who are considered kind of with it, with technology, right? I think that even they are quite scared because we see so many hacks happening. And obviously we know that once you know, the crypto's been sent, it's pretty much impossible to get it back unless the chain reorgs or something like that. And no one's going to reorg the chain for you, right? For an individual, even if you lose millions of dollars, we've already seen like Ethereum, we're not going to reorg the chain or kind of doing a regular state change to unfreeze the parity funds. That's, you know, pretty much been a resounding no from the community. You know, there was the whole Binance hack with the Bitcoin being stolen and the reorg being entertained. And the community said, you know, like, hell no, you know, even though it's possible. So I definitely think custody is going to open up the floodgates as well. All right, moving on to the project updates now. The first thing I've got here is Compound V2 is live. This is really, really exciting. So the biggest feature of V2 of Compound is what's called C tokens. Now, these tokens are basically an IOU of sorts. So basically how it works is when you supply an asset to the Compound protocol, such as ETH or DAI, you receive a C token in return. Now, this C token represents your stake or your kind of, you know, your assets in the Compound protocol, and you can move this C token around. So basically you can actually just put it into your ledger to keep it safe. And that means that the only way someone can access your assets on Compound is by having those C tokens. So, you know, you put it in your cold storage or your ledger device or a hardware wallet or whatever, and you can use Compound from cold storage. It's not exactly using it from cold storage because smart contract bugs exist and things like that, whereas your tokens or assets can be stolen from Compound if there's a smart contract bug or exploit. But, you know, other than that, you just need these C tokens to access your assets in there. And the coolest thing is that you'll still be able to earn interest on your deposits and things like that by just holding these C tokens. And you'll be able to trade them on to other people, like on a decentralized exchange or something. Maybe you don't want the exposure to the assets in Compound anymore, or your position in Compound anymore, and you'd rather trade that away, maybe at a slight premium. Someone can buy these C tokens on a decentralized exchange, or even on a centralized exchange, but I doubt any of them are going to integrate the C tokens just yet. So yeah, really, really cool. This has been coming for quite a while. Compound, you know, is one of the many DeFi protocols that we're both obviously quite bullish on. So it's great to see them get this out so fast, because I think we spoke about this a few months ago where they were teasing V2 and they were saying it you know, it's coming very soon. And it has. It's you know, it's released. It's live on mainnet. The testnet went, you know, obviously live a few months ago, but it's great to see it. It's already live.
Yeah, it's pretty cool to see we're already entering kind of like V2 on some of the bigger DeFi apps. It's kind of like, where did time go, right? Like, I feel like the DeFi movement was just kicking off, and now we're seeing great already version 2s and like newer revolutions as far as how like interest can be managed and stuff like that. Definitely a pretty strong arms race on the lending and borrowing side right now between Maker, Dharma, and Compound, right? Like, they're all putting out great products. I mean, as far as like user experience goes, Compound and Dharma they're doing cool things. Like, they're crushing it. Like, I like Dharma's site's really cool, and Compound's kind of innovation around these C tokens. I mean, just think about how cool of a concept it is that you could have this token just sitting in your cold storage, like you mentioned, and it's just earning interest, right? Like, we finally kind of embarked into, I mean, for years, one of my biggest complaints about Ether holdings or any crypto holdings was it's sitting there and you can't put it to use, right? Like, people like putting their money to use for them. You should be earning interest. It should be relatively easy to make, you know, 4 or 5% a year safely on your US dollars. We need to get there on crypto too. And we're definitely getting there. I mean, I think supplying Ether is a little bit of a different story right now, but supplying DAI, and I think DAI right now on Compound is like 11% supply APR, and USDC is 6%. And, you know, it's a little bit higher on Dharma for USDC, but we're starting to see very cool avenues if you're sitting on USD to be able to move it into the crypto space and earn more on it, which is neat. Hopefully someday we get there with Ether and, you know, some other tokens. Those are still pretty low because people don't want to actually borrow those. Really, the only reason you would borrow Ether is to short it. So I think the supply APR for Ether on Compound is like 0.01%. But, you know, the answer there is going to be staking, right? So there's going to be this really cool combination where you can supply your Ether in staking and probably earn, you know, 4 to 7%. It's kind of my range of estimation over time. And then you're going to even be able to take your dollars that you still have in your bank account and digitalize them or tokenize them and earn, you know, 7 or 8%, which is going to beat any investment option or savings account type option that you're going to be able to get on your dollar. So just a cool time for DeFi in general. I think the whole lending borrowing space is really being built out. We're seeing cool stuff. I still want to kind of see the next wave, which to me is around tokenizing other assets and decentralized exchanges really taking off. But, you know, Compound's doing a great job. You know, we had Robert on the podcast a few months back, and you and I have been talking about kind of doing like follow-up series with people that have been on Into the Ether in the past. And I think this would be a good example of that. So I think we want to start embarking on that. Like, if you've been on and you've released a new product, or your product has evolved a lot, kind of have them back on to talk about the new releases.
Yeah, that would be really cool. Because yeah, a lot of these protocols are going under major, you know, changes. Especially something like, I guess 0x is currently on V2. They're going to go to V3, I think, end of the year or something like that. We obviously got Compound and V2. Dharma's not reimagining themselves, but kind of, they've done like a massive branding kind of push and marketing push. Of course, Set Protocol, we still got to get them on the podcast, but they're going live now with a lot of different sets and things like that. Obviously, Multicollateral DAI is coming as well for Maker. Yeah, so a lot of these things are evolving quite fast in the DeFi space. Not just the DeFi space too, I guess. Like, something like the Ethereum name service got a major overhaul recently as well. So the dev happening in the Ethereum space is just, you know, it's second to none. They're just so, it's so fast moving, and it has actual users as well. Like, this isn't just stuff that's being put out there and no one's using it. Like, we all know the you know, we've all been seeing the hockey stick growth for things like Dharma and Compound and obviously Mako over the last year with all the ETH locked up. So yeah, we're going to be seeing these protocols evolve very fast, and it's going to catch a lot of people off guard about how fast these grow once more people get comfortable using them. All right, the next update I wanted to talk about was the Ethereum Foundation. So they put out a blog post this week, basically their spring 2019 update. Now, this was quite a good update, quite packed. It basically ran through what the AFC is, how it positions itself within Ethereum going forward. We know that they announced at Ethereal that they're going to be earmarking $30 million over the next 12 months to developing Ethereum, you know, whether that's 2.0 or 1.x or various other initiatives, including education and things like that. So they've taken this kind of subtraction mindset as opposed to an addition mindset that they've been doing in the past. So basically, there's a table on the blog post that says, you know, instead of capturing opportunities, they distribute opportunities to the community. Instead of pulling stuff in-house, they pull out to push out to distribute to people, you know, kind of things like that. So they want the EF to kind of be decentralizing a lot of the things that it's been doing over the past few years and getting it out into the community, which I think is a really good initiative. You know, the EF, I think, is a resource allocator first and foremost, whether that be money or knowledge or kind of education and things like that. They definitely obviously have a big war chest that they can distribute out to people. I think, you know, with the ETH price going up now, that war chest is ballooned to over $150 million worth of ETH. So that, you know, if they keep spending $30 million a year for the next, you know, 5 years, that gives them a 5-year runway, of course. But, you know, they keep the treasury in ETH. So I think, I mean, we all expect ETH to be higher than what it is now. Like, even if it only goes to $1,000, that gives the, you know, the EF $600 million, I think, to work with. So definitely a resource allocator there with money, but also with knowledge, right? The EF currently employs people like Vitalik, I'm not sure about Vlad anymore, but, you know, Danny Ryan, Justin Drake, a lot of these core researchers and things like that, that have like the bleeding edge knowledge of Ethereum 2.0 and Ethereum in general. So I think that them getting that knowledge out there more and sharing it more and relaying it from their perspective is going to be very positive for the space. But yeah, so I do suggest everyone go read the blog post. It's very good. It'll give you kind of insight into the EF. Like, we all know that the EF hasn't been as transparent as you wanted it to be over the last few months or years, I guess. But I think they are trying now to be more transparent, and they've promised quarterly updates. So we should expect another update in another 3 months, I guess. Maybe a summer update. I mean, for me, it's winter. I almost said winter there. But yeah, so really good to see this and hope it continues.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's just seeing an effort to put out a post like this and have a little bit more transparency made me very happy, right? I've called for a little bit more transparency in the past, and not to be critical about the EF. I mean, I think they've historically done a pretty good job. I think they've really turned it around in the last 12 to 18 months, which maybe the bear market knocked some sense into everybody, but definitely good to see. And Aya said at her presentation at Ethereal, kind of announced like where they funded in the past with their grants and like what categories they've been giving to and how much they want to give in the future. And this blog post just kind of tied that up. And she had mentioned they were going to put these out quarterly. So just good to see. I mean, the EF doesn't need to be like 100% transparent, right? They need to just put out like enough for the ecosystem to know that they're at least operating efficiently and really mainly like where they're spending the money, right? So like with Moloch DAO out there and a lot of kind of funding and grants programs popping up, you want to know like where the holes are in current ecosystem funding to go fill, right? Like, we don't want to be duplicating efforts on the funding side that the EF is doing, right? Like, we want to kind of go to the spaces that maybe aren't getting the funding and kind of fill those holes. So I think when, you know, at least when I ask for transparency, that's kind of what I care about. But they obviously, like you said, are sitting on a lot of good knowledge too. So just kind of sharing that, and they have a ton of good resources. But yeah, it was good to see. I mean, hopefully we can get someone from the EF on the podcast soon and kind of talk about this a little bit. That's one of the short-term guest goals for us that I think we'll be able to do and just kind of dive into this a little bit more. But, you know, we always joke like the best the best fix for a lack of Ethereum funding is a price pump. And we're getting that over the last few months. So hopefully it keeps going and then everything will be golden.
Yeah, exactly. It's funny how we had the talk about kind of the block reward funding for Ethereum. And that kind of, I guess, has fizzled out since the price went up because it just gives the EF a lot more money to play with. But I think what came out of those kind of conversations as well was more focused on things like Moloch DAO and now Metacartel DAO. So I definitely think that going down the DAO path for this kind of funding, extra funding outside of the EF is the better option. The block reward funding, it just comes with too many problems, like governance problems. You know, how much funding do you want to allocate from the block reward sort of thing? I think something like that needs to be done at the start. Like I did have an idea that doing it on ETH2 wouldn't be too bad because ETH2 is obviously a new chain and things like that. But even then, like how is it governed, right? Are we just going to give all the money to the EF? Like they've already got a ton of money. Like even, as I said, if the price even rises another, I mean, I think I did my math wrong before, another 10 times from here, you know, the price goes to like over $1 billion or something. So, you know, whether you think ETH's going to go another 10 times from here is another story. But I think that we're obviously in crypto spring now, so money's going to be flowing a lot better. There are a lot of other teams that I hope that can get funded too. Like obviously there's, you know, Austin Griffith with Burner Wallet and, you know, even things like Instadap, the guys behind Instadap. Like I saw an interesting comment from Richard Burton on Twitter saying that he doesn't want to donate to these teams. He wants to fund their companies. So hopefully these teams start creating companies. And now that the money is kind of flowing more and everyone's feeling a bit more rich, they can invest in these companies. And we can actually see these kind of silent stars that have been making these awesome products get funded and be able to continue this without having to issue a token or something of the sorts.
I fully agree with you. One of the best things that, or the best thing that came out of the block rewards funding debates were kind of, you know, getting popularity around Moloch and Metacartel and stuff like that. I mean, I personally think that's the better way to fund stuff. Like there's a lot of money floating around this space if we can just organize people. And I do think people want to give back, right? So I think that's the path we need to take. And hopefully, price keeps going and then the EF's really stocked as far as funding goes.
Yeah, I think they will be, to be honest. You know, we've spoken about price a lot on this podcast, a little like on this particular episode, which is funny. But you know, it's very hard not to be bullish when we see like all the metrics, and we're actually going to talk about them some of the metrics a little bit later. But yeah, it's very hard not to be bullish on Ethereum right now when we see all the metrics, and considering that we've already gone through like this massive bull market for the last massive bear market over 2018, which kind of killed a lot of people's spirits. But now that we're seeing the price go up and a lot of these things go live, especially we're just talking about how the DeFi protocols are evolving quite fast, and a lot of these teams have treasuries in ETH as well. So they're definitely coming into some extra money too. So yeah, I don't think 2019 is going to be a year where we struggle to fund things, to be honest, as long as we can get people, as you said, organize people and rally them around the right things to fund instead of just throwing all our money at ICOs again. I think that we should be good for going forward. All right, on to the on-chain activity for the week. Now, just a quick mention, I want to pull one out for our boy or girl, not sure who it is, our CDP3228. Now, this, I mean, 3228 is kind of infamous within the community for being liquidated that one time for a very large amount and a second time almost getting liquidated again, saved by about 25 cents, which is quite crazy. But yeah, 3228 is known for playing hard and fast with their CDP, always having a very kind of high liquidation price and not lowering it enough to protect itself from a sudden dump in ETH. So yeah, they basically not closed out their CDP, but it's only got one DAI worth of debt left. There's basically no ETH locked up in it anymore. And I did notice, Eric, that you saw that they were actually going to maybe riskier pastures over at DYDX. You did some sleuthing on Etherscan and found where they were putting that money that they had freed into.
Yeah, I guess the beauty or not beauty at all of Ethereum right now is you could very easily track people. It looks like he's not done. It looks like to me he's going to DYDX to open some leverage positions there. So I guess my hunch would be, I mean, definitely seems like a risk taker, and I'm sure with the bull market coming, he's not going to stop, he or she. But so I guess he's the CDP stability fee maybe just got too high and wanted to close it out and move over to a cheaper option and with a little bit more leverage maybe. So definitely an all-time legend in Ethereum, and potentially maybe some meme shirts related to this in the ETHub store someday. I don't know, but that would be pretty cool.
Yeah, I think the stability fee is definitely a reason. Mariano Conti from Maker actually commented on my tweet about it and said, you know, it seems like the stability fee was too much for 3228. And I'm like, I replied and I said, so getting liquidated once for like 50,000 ETH and then almost getting liquidated a second time wasn't too much, but as 20% stability fee was. So yeah. It was quite funny.
That's so true. Yeah, God forbid you pay a little bit of interest and then lose half your stack.
Yeah, exactly. I think that they had maybe lost too much ETH already and were like, no, I can't pay this 20% fee on my CDP. It's too much. Oh, boy. All right. And quickly, another thing that I just wanted to mention, Lamboshi Nagagini on Twitter put out this really cool chart this week that basically shows that the more ETH is being used kind of interacting with smart contracts a lot more lately than it is with just simple sends and things like that. And this is something that we've been kind of hammering on about for a while now, that people are getting, I mean, transactions are getting fatter, where they're obviously the network utilization is at 90% plus pretty most days. And I think this is because of DeFi mainly, people interacting with a lot of the DeFi smart contracts, which cost more than a simple send, of course, and also other things like the ENS and crypto games and things like that. So this basically shows that people are actually using Ethereum. When all these people on Twitter say, oh, no one's using Ethereum, it has no users, it's just complete like horse shit, if I'm being honest, because if no one was using Ethereum, then they wouldn't be doing, you know, interacting with smart contracts. We wouldn't see DeFi exploding as it has. It's over $500 million locked in DeFi now. It's like 2 million ETH or something. You know, we wouldn't see things like the Ethereum name service, crypto games exploding, all these sorts of things. So yeah, it's just a really cool chart to see. I definitely go check it out in the newsletter. It's linked under the interesting tweets section. You'll be able to see the chart and see how things have changed since 2017. Basically, most of the spikes have come, I think, towards the second half of 2017 and definitely in 2018 a lot as well. So yeah, go check out that chart.
Yeah, this is a good one. This is something we've talked about a lot. I put out a tweet thread months back about like gas usage on Ethereum and talked about this. And this is why I'm not a fan at all about, there's very few metrics that you can compare across chains because things are just so different. Like transactions the day between Bitcoin and Ethereum is very meaningless because really what matters on Ethereum is like the gas used, right? So he talked about, you know, exactly this, where transactions a day are down from the peak, but gas used is way up. So every interaction, you know, a simple ETH sends 21,000 gas, or a simple, you know, just send ETH from one person to another. So a lot of use cases, you know, up until the top of the last bubble were just simple sending Ether around. And now that we have all these applications and DeFi, more gas is required for those transactions. So we're seeing a spike in gas used, but a drop. Well, transactions per day is pretty flat, definitely down from the peak, but recently flat. But also one of my favorite metrics that Etherscan has now is gas use per or utilization percentage. So Ethereum obviously has a cap per day on how much gas can be used because of the block limit, and they show like how much of the network capacity is being used per day, and we're up to like 97-98%, and really we've been up at that cap. I mean, there's a lot of weird stuff there because miners won't accept transactions under certain gas costs. Vitalik talked about this a lot, because the risk of an uncle is higher than the reward of accepting a transaction at too low of a gas price at a point. So, you know, that's why we're never like fully at 100% network utilization, but we've really fluctuated between 80 to 100%, which to me is essentially at the cap for months now. So we really do need scaling solutions. And when E2 comes around, it will obviously see an explosion in gas use per day.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just going to keep growing, which is going to be really cool to watch. But yeah, we'll see how it evolves into the future. All right, on to the interesting tweet of the week. Now, David Hoffman put out this really interesting recap tweet about ZK rollups. So Vitalik did this presentation on ZK rollups, which is kind of like a scalability, you know, the kind of research that he's been looking at, you know, a few weeks ago. And David basically went through and painstakingly broke down the video in a 17-part tweet thread. I highly suggest going to read the whole thread, but this is really cool. I think the TLDR is basically ZK rollups allow us to bundle transactions into kind of smaller transactions, and the scalability improvements are massive. We can theoretically get on-chain transaction throughput from 15 transactions per second to 500 transactions per second if all the block space is allocated to ZK rollups. So that means if all the transactions are using ZK rollups. Now, I think Vitalik sees this being used on as a way to basically use ETH2 phase one as without having to wait for phase two as like a state transition machine or a virtual machine of sorts to start interacting with smart contracts and things like that. It does get quite complex, so you will need to read the whole thread to understand why these things kind of work, because it does play with zero knowledge magic, which I don't think many people totally understand outside of the actual core researchers and things like that. But yeah, it's just more scalability improvements that will be coming to Ethereum, hopefully. I think there's a group called Matter Labs that are actually doing research and development into this right now and trying to build something that can be used on Ethereum. So I think they're on Twitter if you want to go check them out as well. And they've got funding from the EF to do this as well. So yeah, great thread from David. Definitely go read it. And yeah, I hope to see more threads like this from various people in the community, just breaking down these things for people, because there's a lot of this stuff that gets buried in like ETH research forums or random videos, you know, from presentations that people do, and no one really breaks it down because it's quite hard. But you know, I think the motivation is that it actually, you know, educates people, gets you, I guess, selfishly gets you more followers on Twitter, because people are like, oh, this guy's really interesting. He put out something really interesting for me to learn. I think education is severely, you know, underrated in this space. And I think actually we might write up or get David to write up a kind of ZK rollup page on EthHub. That's something we're missing from memory.
Yeah, fully agree with, I mean, everything you said, but your last comment especially, like there's not enough people kind of taking these more complex concepts that maybe the developer side of things really understands and kind of translating that to the non-developer side. I mean, obviously that's a core goal of ETHUB, but good to see someone like David doing this. He's done stuff like this in the past as well. I guess definitely a plug for his podcast too. It's POV Crypto. He does a podcast. But yeah, there's a lot of like low-hanging fruit items like this where there's concepts that are very complex, but if you just kind of break them down, then all of a sudden it clicks to people, right? And like, I'm not going to act like I fully understand ZK rollups now, right? But this thread just helped me, you know, break it down and understand it a little bit better. And especially, there's a lot of cool research out there and YouTube videos that just get lost. And Twitter's kind of a good medium to take that and translate it. And for us, you know, I've liked putting out Medium posts too with like EIP-1559, just kind of break concepts down into more biteable chunks. So hopefully people keep doing this. And definitely, I know this took David, I'm sure, a lot of time, you know, to watch the video, and you're not going to just watch it and understand it the first time, right? You're going to have to go through it a lot and take notes and really kind of commit to it. And then putting out a thread that helps people understand. And, you know, I guess at the core of all this is it's very bullish that scalability options are coming out for just the ETH1 chain, right? And we've talked about this too, but you know, Ethereum 2.0 to me is going to happen, and it's on the right path. And, you know, I think we need it, because I'm especially a big fan of proof of stake. But theoretically, I think Ethereum could live totally fine with just ETH1 and scalability solutions, right? So it's cool to see stuff like this continuously pop up.
Yeah, exactly. I think there's a lot of these buried nuggets in ETH research that some of them don't go anywhere. I think a lot of them don't go anywhere, actually, whether that's because it doesn't get enough attention, or it's too complicated, or it doesn't actually work as, you know, first thought. But yeah, if you want to go check them out for yourself, definitely go to the ETH research forum or even GitHub, and you'll be able to see a lot of this stuff popping around. People have tons of ideas. Just a lot of them doesn't get materialized, whether it's due to time or funding or anything like that. Or maybe it just doesn't work. it doesn't work as originally planned. But yeah, enough on that one for now. We'll move on to the blog posts section. Now, this is one of my favorite blog posts of the week. This is put out by MetaMask. It's their first look at their metrics and what they see on their site. So obviously, everyone's pretty familiar with MetaMask. It's a Chrome extension, or I think that they have extensions for many browsers, but basically an extension that lets you access Ethereum, access a wallet, lets you access various functions. I'm pretty sure it's like the default when you set up, an Ethereum wallet. You want to be using, I guess you can use MyCrypto, but you know, if you want an extension, you use MetaMask. But yeah, basically this blog post goes through all the metrics that they're seeing on their end. Now, I love this blog post. Like, it's one of my favorites in a while, simply because it basically says that there are actually hundreds of thousands of real users on Ethereum every single day. And this is because of the fact that not every user is doing an on-chain transaction every day, right? Traditionally, people are trying to measure daily active users via on-chain transactions. And I've been pretty vocal about this on Twitter, that it's a really, really bad way of measuring use, especially for things like dApps. And there's a stat in this blog post that basically says that on any given day, only about 30% of MetaMask users actually do an on-chain transaction. Now, this is just insane to me, because it just simply shows that people are still using MetaMask. 70% of people are still using MetaMask to do other things like sign messages and things like that. They're just not doing an on-chain transaction that day. So if you're just looking at on-chain transactions, you're only getting 30% of the picture. So I'm really, really glad that MetaMask put this out, because it gives me something tangible to point to whenever someone says, hey, no one's using Ethereum, you know, the on-chain transactions for dApps are very low and things like that. And it's not true. And I hope that if anyone on, you know, if you're on Twitter or on Reddit or anything like that, that if you see something and someone, you know, kind of fighting Ethereum like this, just link them this blog post, say, you know, on-chain transactions is a very bad measure for dApps. And I think that we can start to change the narrative around this and get ahead of it, because it's just crap. And you know, one other metric that I really wanted to call out as well was that MetaMask broke down what they see, what transactions they see by type. Now, 64% of transactions are other contract interactions. So this is outside of token transfers. So as we were just discussing before, there's a lot of people interacting with Ethereum in different ways, not just for simple sends anymore, whether that be ETH or token sends, but also for a lot of smart contract interactions such as DeFi or registering an Ethereum name or anything like that. So yeah, it just confirms everything that we've already been trying to get out there, but it actually gives us tangible metrics to point to.
Yeah, this is the ultimate FUD weapon, right? Like, crush another FUD narrative like it's dead. I mean, that was like our original goal with ETH Hub, is to just create like anti-FUD links that you could just, you know, fight back on Twitter, social media, kind of when Ethereum was, in my opinion, under attack with anti-narratives. I mean, this post is great. Like, I guarantee you I'll link to this post 30 times over the next year. Like, And I hope other dApps and like applications start doing this too, right? Like, I'm a little surprised it took MetaMask this long to kind of put out statistics like this. But it's amazing. Like, 264,000 monthly active users in April is what they had estimated they had. Like, there's like an opt-in and opt-out kind of policy with their data, so they didn't have exact numbers there. But yeah, they just broke down all the transactions, and I was actually surprised like how many testnet transactions there were. Like, of all the transactions in April, only 63% were on mainnet. So a lot of people using MetaMask for testnets, which is good, right? Like, we need to make sure that testnets are being used and actually tested on. And they kind of like laid out the most dApp usage. So top mainnet size by transaction volume, 0x universe was number one. So like everything under 0x, and then CryptoKitties was number two. Dice to Win was three. Axie Infinity was four, and Fork Delta was five. Like, just all of this. And one of my favorites was 25 different dApps had over 5,000 transactions in April. So, I mean, this article is just full of, you know, it's just a FUD weapon, and it's beautiful. Like, I basically want to just like link it on ETH Hub and just copy and paste the content, or just put a link there. Because we got like that question section or whatever, and we should just make one of them like, I heard nobody uses Ethereum, and literally just have this article there.
Yeah, I think we should do that. Actually, I might get on that after we finish recording. But I do want to just quickly mention one thing. You mentioned the top sources of transaction volume there. It's funny, the only DeFi thing that you mentioned was 0x and the universe of 0x in terms of the transaction volume for dApps. And it's funny because I always hammer on Twitter about how DeFi apps don't require lots of transactions to be valuable. Maker isn't there. It's not in the top five. Dharma isn't in the top five, right? Compound, not in the top five. That's because you don't need many transactions to interact with these protocols. So another FUD narrative dead, basically.
Yeah. No, it's so true. So true. I mean, like a combination of this data with like a DeFi pulse. So you have like transaction data and locked in DeFi data. Like that's the ultimate combination.
Yeah, exactly. Scott Lewis, if you're listening to this, get on that. The kind of creator of DeFi Pulse. We'd love right. to see that. All right, cool. That's it for this week. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in again. If you haven't subscribed to the newsletter yet or you want to see what we talked about, go to ethub.substack.com. And that's it. Keep an eye on our socials for like kind of the merch store. It might go live this week. If not, next week. Depends when I can get to it, basically. But yeah, enjoy the week, everyone, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Into the Ether podcast.